constructed with jewels and filled with lotus flowers and birds chirping and water like nectar. The road was surcharged with many cool breezes which carried the fragrances from the various flowers. It carried the construction as far as Kanayanatashala. But in his mind, the road could not go beyond there. He could not understand why. And he was astonished. And then he told the devotees that Lord Chaitanya would not go to Vrindavan at that time. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Nrisinghananda Brahmacharya was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. And when he heard that from Kulia, Mahaprabhu was going to Vrindavan, although he had no material wealth, he constructed a very path to traverse in his mind. Some of the descriptions given here. But he could not go beyond Kanayanatashala, so he concluded that Mahaprabhu would not go to Vrindavan at that time. For pure devotee, it is the same whether he materially constructs a path or constructs one within his mind. This is because the Supreme Lord, Janardhan, is bhavagrahi, or appreciative of the sentiment. For him, a path made with actual jewels and one made with mental jewels are the same. The subtle mind is also matter. So any path, indeed anything for the service of the Lord, whether in gross matter or subtle, is accepted equally by the Lord, who accepts the attitude of his devotee and sees how much he's prepared to serve him. The devotee is at liberty to serve the Lord either in gross matter or subtle matter. The important point is that the service be in relation to the Supreme Lord. Om Gyanatira Mandasya Ganajana Shalakaya Chakshurun Maritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Menama. The Lord has just recently left Vidyanagara, the abode of learning, and gone to Kulia, which is Govardhan Hill, which is appropriately the backdrop on the altar today. From there, he desires to proceed to Vrindavan, but can't go beyond Kanayanatashala. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that at Kulia, many atheists and blasphemers fell at the Lord's lotus feet, and he excused them and gave them love of God. Prominent amongst whom are Devananda Pandit, who committed Vaishnava Aparad. He didn't do anything himself, he just passively stood by as his disciples threw Srivasa Thakur out of the academy, because he became so emotional hearing the verses of Bhagavatam, even though Devananda Pandit had no devotion at the time. And Gopal Chapala was freed from his hellish life as consequence of his avenging Srivas Thakur. The term for offense is aparad, which means to become distanced from Radha, or the process of worship. And amongst all the list of disqualifications of the living entities in the Kali Yuga, foremost is their propensity to blaspheme devotees, which is the first offense to the holy name, for which there is no shelter other than the holy name. But that holy name, who is Krishna, will not take the penitent plea of anyone seriously if they do not also beg forgiveness from the devotee who they have offended, as we heard in Srila Prabhupada's readings this morning. So what was it that transpired between our last discussion on this matter last week, when the Lord appeared in Vidyanagar, and today when he's in Kulia? Or rather, what is it that transpired between the time that Mahaprabhu left Navadvip, maybe 10 years earlier? Because his conclusion was that the medicine he was offering to the living entities to become free of their material desires and offenses and conditioning proved to be more detrimental than the initial condition for which the medicine was meant to cure them. He said, "I've come to set them free, but my effort has bound them more." Lord Nityananda understood what was underlying this discussion, and going into seclusion to burst into tears, understanding that the Lord was contemplating taking sannyas. So what was it that transpired between the time he left Nadia to go to Keshava Bharati and today's reading, when he reappears at Kulia and everyone is approaching him so repentant due to the offenses that they had committed during his Prakatalila prior in Navadvip Dham? What transpired was the fire of separation and the consequent repentance, which made the Navadvipvasis eligible for atonement, because they were no longer taking for granted the treasure, that Golokera Premadan, which Lord Chaitanya had come to distribute. Why is it that we chant the holy name, we don't experience the feeling? Oftentimes, it's like the residents of Nadia, that like any phenomenal wonder of this world, if we're repeatedly seeing it transpiring before our eyes with easy and effortless accessibility, we have a tendency to take it for granted. The holy name, the most priceless treasure, brought down from Goloka, the treasure of Goloka, to be distributed freely in this material world, because we think we're chanting the holy name with our material tongue by our own efforts, we tend to take it for granted. But if we would consider that the holy name, like the form of the Lord, is self-manifesting, it's not produced by human effort, and the extreme mercy by which the Lord would agree to condescend and dance on the tongue of even the most foul-mouthed and omnivorous persons, and yet to take such a gift for granted is the greatest misfortune of all. And expressing that misfortune, Nam namakadi bahunar divishna visharpi shaktis tatrapita niyamatis maranena kala etadashiva kripa bhagavan mamapi dudaiva midisham yahajini nana raga. My Lord, you're so merciful that you've made yourself so readily and easily available in the sound of your holy name, showering down your mercy upon living entities. But I am so unfortunate. I have no qualification or no taste for it. So, as we were discussing Gaur Purnim, the essence of Lord Chaitanya's experience and teachings condensed into Shikshastikam, which begins by glorification of the holy name and its efficacy. In Vaidhi Bhakti, cleanses away material desires, cleanses the mirror of the heart so it can reflect the true image of the Lord and ourselves in a relationship. But then, the Lord lamenting his misfortune is so he feels no attraction for it, articulating our experience. So what follows? From Vaidhi Bhakti leading to Agamug Bhakti, from Sambhog into Vipralamba, and including the whole Astakaliya Lila, Shikshastikam progresses from the first verse, glorifying the holy name, into lamentation due to separation, due to not experiencing attraction for the holy name. And then, very important verse emphasized by Kaviraj Goswami, telling us to string it on the thread of the holy name and wear it around our necks so we never lose it or forget it. Trinadapi sunichina, tadarapi sahishnina, amanidame nadina, kirtaniya sudharavi. Separation, which the residents of Nadia were feeling since Mahaprabhu had left to take sannyas, they were lamenting. We criticized him. We didn't appreciate him. We failed to grasp the depth of what he was trying to give. So those years burning in the fire of separation, which burned away all the material desires and offenses, which block our attraction to the holy name, now when he is reappearing at Kulia, and they're all coming by the millions, pleading for his forgiveness. And the atonement he gives was just variations of what he told that one brahmana. If with your mouth you've ingested poison, meaning offenses or material desires, that will kill you. It will kill your spiritual life. Chaitanya means life force, the actual nature of the soul. It is killed by offenses and material desires, especially offenses, aparag, distancing us from Radha, the process of worship. So Mahaprabhu said, if you've ingested poison and it's killing you, there's only one antidote. That is the nectar of the Holy Name. So, Shikshastakam progresses through many dimensions. Sambhog, Dvipralamba, glorification of the Holy Name to Raj Bhakti. And in that Vipralamba, O Govinda, feeling your separation, it seems like a moment is different translations. It could be 12 years or more, or it could be a millennium or more. Of course, 12 years is significant in terms of the last years in Gambhira, in which he was actually contemplating the experience he articulated in the Shikshastakam. But separation has many virtues. It increases the longing for union, and it's also humbler. As Srila Prabhupada explains, the six Goswamis were not like some who proclaimed, "Yes, I saw Krishna," but they're always madly searching and crying for Krishna. "Yes, I have seen Krishna." That's the end. It's arrogant. And it will make one arrogant. The feeling of separation. Of course, first you have to have love. Separation is a very exalted feeling. First there must be love. And that love is enhanced by the rhythms of Sambhog and Vipralamba, each enhancing and heightening one another. And as we were leading into but never concluded this topic on Gaur Purnim of Kurukshetra, which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says is the real place of bhajan. That is where the separation reached its highest pinnacle. And that same experience the Brijabasis felt seeing Krishna again at Kurukshetra, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his samadhi gives a sample of what the Navadvip devotees were feeling when Mahaprabhu appeared on that rooftop in Kulia. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in samadhi experiences and conveys to us the feeling that seeing Mahaprabhu in the robes of a sannyasi, his head shaven, gives me pain. But he is my Lord and I'm his servant. But still it's painful. He performs these different leelas for different reasons. But I want to take him back to the temple of Srivas, where he would dance with his devotees with that long wavy hair framing his moon-like face and his white dhoti and his playful charm as he interacted with his friends and Nadia. I want to take him back. This is the mood of the Brijabasis at Kurukshetra, which is being reenacted here in the pages of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. This separation, this great yearning and longing to see Krishna again. And the solar eclipse was the occasion. And a great anticipation when they came before Krishna and found that it's not him. those decades of burning separation and the promise of relief to see him again at Kurukshetra. But when they came before him, it's not him, it's somebody else. He's in the robes of a king, surrounded by courtiers, clad in armor, bearing weapons, riding horses and elephants and chariots clad in armor. It did not relieve the separation, it intensified it. So this scene here, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is explaining at Kulia, is reminiscent of the meeting at that place where Lord Parashuram was absolved of his sins of killing the 21 generations of Kshatriyas, and the lakes filled with blood then transformed into water. Same place where the Jadus assembled because the Kurus in bygone ages had performed sacrifice there. And Krishna was thinking, this is a good place to meet the Brijavasis. Because the reason he gave for not returning to Braj was that his many enemies would pursue him there and there would be havoc. Because there's no defenses, there's no armies in Braj. So that if I meet them at Kurukshetra, the demons will be unsuspecting, and even if they come, all the royal Kshatriya families will be united there. There'll be no hazards for the Brijavasis. They will not jeopardize their meeting. So the chosen time was the solar eclipse. And as that great celestial sun closed his eye, and the earth entered a time of darkness, Kurukshetra was illumined by the sun which shines within the hearts of all the Brijavasis. And by the presence of the Brijavasis, Kurukshetra was transformed into Vrindavan, which goes wherever the Brijavasis go because it's within their hearts. And when Krishna and Balaram came before Nanda and Yashoda, they could not even offer obeisances because Yashoda just pulled Krishna into her arms as Nanda clasped Krishna to his chest, and they both experienced their long-lost son just melting into their embrace. But to speak of Krishna, thinking that now I'm home, because the embrace of Mother Yashoda conveys the maternal affection of all of Braj. He was thinking, nowhere is there love like this to be found. And then, you know, as Krishna and Balaram were meeting all the royal dynasties, as the etiquette dictated, Balaram noticed that, you know, the gopis were off in the distance. So Balaram kind of slipped into the center and distracted the Jadus from seeing that Krishna just slipped aside and actually disappeared and reappeared in a forest outside the field of Kurukshetra. And when Krishna requested to the gopis, do you remember me? And they replied, we haven't had a second thought about you. But when Krishna's golden crown fell down at the pinkish lotus feet of Srimati, and his tears anointed the earth, and she was so shocked that she could only reply that, I am such a sinner. And Krishna looked up in such astonishment how can she, whose very name purifies the heart from all sins and offenses, be proclaiming herself a sinner? And she responded that, because in your separation I continue to live. He asked, do you consider me ungrateful? And then he began to preach. It is the Lord who through destiny brings the living entities together like straws in a river and then separates them again in time. To which the gopis responded, well, that's clever. First, you try to placate us with philosophy, and then you indicate what everyone already knows, that you are God, who is that destiny, who brings us together and separates us again. They weren't impressed with that. But when Krishna told them that I'm conquered by your love, that is the song they longed to hear. When they asked Krishna, how is it that we can attain you? He said, come to Dwarka. They said, come to Vrindavan. And then he repeated the same message he had sent by means of Uddhava about how to meditate upon him. But then they understood that that message was much deeper than it appeared to be at face value. Because in what appeared to be instructions in Gyan, Krishna was revealing by means of his double language his deeper presence in Vipralamba than in Sambhog. His instructions to meditate is not like what the jnanis attain by seeing Brahman, or the yogis by perceiving Paramatma within the heart, but the devotees see Shyamasundara everywhere. And that is Swarasika Rag, complete absorption. Not like this painting of Pushkar right over Pushkar's head on the back wall here, when Nanda is being devoured by the serpent. That is an obstacle to be overcome, this desire to merge, which actually swallows Nanda, which is the joy of service, to swallow in the monistic form of merging with the Absolute. But the Brijabasis unite with Krishna in love, in purpose. As Srila Prabhupada is explaining in these purports, Krishna is bhavagrahi, he accepts the intent. And when the intent of the devotee is one with the Lord, that is absorption. And when Krishna proclaimed that I am yours forever to behold in your meditation, and he said, there's really no need for any more philosophy, because that will simply obstruct your love, which flows naturally like rivers to the sea. There's only one thing that you need to know, he told the gopis, which applies to us as well. Krishna said, if you want to behold me, you simply have to call me by name and I will be present. So Neelachala, Jagannath Puri, the temple of Jagannath in Puri, is Dwarka. Gundicha is Vrindavan. The road in between is Kurukshetra. where more significant than the great conquest of arms was the great contest of hearts, in which Krishna did not win, the Vrijavasis did. So that's a conclusion that we never got to on Gorpanim, when Krishna, Balaram and Subhadra returned to Braj. And after the reunion and the Artik, Krishna told Srimati that in Tattva there is no separation, but simply to raise the tide of your loving mood to the highest level, so that I could dive deep into the depths of that ocean. I reside in Puri in a dark form which washed up from the ocean, a dark form which immortalizes the separation that I feel from the Vrijavasis. And you will also take up residence there in a golden form, a complementary form, in which I will taste your separation from me. So Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri, tasting that separation in the Gambhir, would leave home every day to go see Krishna in the temple. And then, after visiting his devotees, he would go to Gadadhar Pandit to study Srimad Bhagavatam. Why does Lord Chaitanya have to study Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit? To understand Lord Chaitanya, we must consider the nature of his devotees. Lord Nityananda, Advaita, Srivas, and Gadadhar. Gadadhar is Srimati Radharani. When Mahaprabhu is in the mood of Krishna, when Mahaprabhu is in the mood of Radha, Gadadhar is Lalita. And when Mahaprabhu wants to understand how to become Radha, who does he learn from? Gadadhar, who teaches him Srimad Bhagavatam. And at the end of the day, he would return to Gambhir, where he would assimilate his experiences through the days and years. After that sonnet came by means of Jagadananda Pandit from Advaita, tell my Lord Mahaprabhu, who is acting just like madmen do, that all the residents of Nadia have turned into madmen too. And in the marketplace, there's no more demand for rice. Jagadananda Pandit laughed as if it was some kind of joke. Swarup Damodar became very grave, almost morose. Mahaprabhu said, that is his order. What does it mean? Advaitacharya is a great worshipper of the Lord. He invites him to come down, and he worships him for some time. Then when he's done with him, he tells him, go home. Only Swarup Damodar understood what this meant. But everyone could see how at that moment the Lord's mood markedly changed. His feelings of separation and the mood of the Vrijavasis really began to blaze to such an extent, an extreme. And we hear how, you know, amongst the cows, he was found in a form like a pumpkin, totally withdrawn, which means he had gone so internal that his arms and legs were withdrawn within his body. That meant That sonnet meant that you have completed your mission of preaching and distributing the glories of the Holy Name. Now you can fulfill your own purposes in coming. And Shikshastakam is the diary of his experience in so doing. So, after Krishna left this world, the gopis returned to Siddhashram because the lake there awards the benediction that bathing in its waters frees one from ever having to experience separation from Krishna again. The gopis relinquished their sacred forms to the water in that lake, which imbued the clay in its banks with a golden aura, with the dark complexion of their mascara, and their body merged into that sacred soil. And devotees take that clay, that gopi chandan, to anoint their bodies with the tilak in the different 12 places as they chant the holy names, to infuse our chanting with that mood of separation. The conclusion we were supposed to reach on Gurpranim, but due to various factors never did, was how Krishna relinquished the debt he incurred in Braj Lila. That's all being rehearsed here in the drama at Kurukshetra in Ratha Yatra, and Krishna's reflections on the matter. Yaya dhamma prapadyante amstataiva bhajamyaham. That promise of Krishna echoes through the ages and scriptures. How he reciprocates devotees' love. But that promise has been broken by the gopis, to whom he cannot reciprocate their love. And why is that? Because Krishna's love is inclusive. It is diffused throughout all creation to all living entities, whereas the gopis' love is exclusive, focused entirely upon Krishna. And thus he is unable to either experience nor reciprocate the merits of the gopis' love. It is only in adopting the mood, the luster, and the compassion of Srimati Radharani, that Krishna was able to liquidate that debt. By undergoing all the trials and tribulations and sacrifice of the gopis, experiencing all the agonies and ecstasies of their love, and focusing all his attention upon them as they did upon him, and furthermore, by infusing Braj Bhakti in the hearts of all, just read that section where Gadadhar Pandit is following Mahaprabhu in his attempt to reach Vrindavan. And the Lord is chastising him. What about your vow to serve Gopinath? But one serves Gopinath unlimitedly simply by seeing you. Your vow to never leave Puri. Everywhere you go is Puri. Your vow of Chaitra Sannyas. Let that go to hell. You cannot go with me. Okay, I won't go with you. We'll just somehow end up in the same place. I'll take a different path. But then at a certain point, the Lord said, if you continue with this ruse, it'll simply condemn me. Gadadhar Pandit fell on the ground unconscious. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya picked him up and consoled him. just remember Bhishma, how Krishna interacted with him. And then when Mahaprabhu, being informed that the governor on the other side of the river is a Muslim, and a very ferocious and degraded one at that, and the Lord arranged a meeting. After which, when Mahaprabhu continued his journey through the land of that Muslim, the Muslim governor was overwhelmed by feelings of separation, which Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says is impossible to describe. What's the point? That by infusing anyone and everyone in all the world with that highest ecstasy of love and separation, which is unique to the Brijavasis, but which by the influence of Mahaprabhu infuses devotees of whatever avatar or whatever rasa or whatever condition with that same predominantly amorous affection of the Brijavasis, and their most intense love and separation, making that available to all the world, Krishna was able, as Lord Gauranga, to repay his debt to the Brijavasis many times over. In a similar mood of feeling a debtor, I have to express to all of you the great privilege of being with you at Gaur Purnim, and how this, the devotees in this Ramayati, individually and collectively, demonstrate such an exemplary spirit of integrity, harmony, maturity, and kindness, that I must say is precisely what I needed to really be in the mood to celebrate Sri Gaur Purnim with you. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
How do we at our, how do I at my stage cultivate that I'm trying to, trying to serve the deities as a servant of Srila Prabhupada, and trying to cultivate the understanding that Krishna is directly and factually here. I may not realize it, but he's directly and factually there while I'm singing and dancing, and at the same time simultaneously be trying to cultivate the mood of, where are you, Krishna? How do you do those two things? I mean, I'm probably trying to understand in a mundane mind, but how do you do
those
two things together?
You actually answered it within your own question. We don't think that we're serving the deity. We consider that I'm assisting my spiritual master who is serving the deity. That mood of servant of the servant, we have no qualification. We're simply assisting Srila Prabhupada. Then we share in his bhakti. And as we chant Hare Krishna, we will, if we're careful and attentive, to follow the principles, avoid offenses, material desires, we will gradually and naturally experience love awakening. And when the love begins to blossom within your heart, it will naturally proceed through rhythms and feelings of union and separation of its own accord. There's nothing artificial. It needs to be imposed. Just chant Hare Krishna with care and attention, following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, the perfect Brijavasi who's leading us on the path. And these experiences will blossom of their own accord within your heart in due course of time.
You mentioned that by distributing the Sankirtan movement, Krishna mitigated the separation that the gopis were feeling.
Am I correct? No, that wasn't the point. The point was Krishna mitigated his debt to the gopis.
Well, how did he do that?
It's actually very complex. Because said in a more clear fashion. The gopis' love is exclusively focused on Krishna. His love is inclusively suffused all the world. And this is just, you know, one aspect. By understanding one, you can infer the others. Krishna, by adopting the mood, the luster, the feelings, and the actual identity, not merging as one, as in the painting, but as one in purpose, as Srila Prabhupada has explained in this purport. Krishna actually became Radha and was able, as Lord Gauranga, by adopting her personality, to reciprocate the love that Krishna was unable to repay to the gopis. And, see, that relinquished, that absolved him of that debt. Furthermore, by sharing and expanding that debt to others by infusing them with a spirit of separation, by expanding that braj bhakti, which is exclusive, which Mahaprabhu did because he's inclusive, infusing that mood of braj bhakti in the hearts of innumerable living entities, Mahaprabhu was able to reciprocate with Krishna, or Krishna was able to reciprocate as Mahaprabhu with Krishna unlimitedly times over the original debt incurred in Brajlila. Well, he did. But he further expanded that.
What about
whose separation? The love itself is the reciprocation for that. It's not that the separation's mitigated, the debt that Krishna was unable to reciprocate.
We often hear, of course, and it's a very important point about criticism, but I always have a dilemma about that. In the sense that, in theory, you know, and philosophically, I understand it. But as a preaching movement, and as an institution, and as different levels of devotees that we are, there seems to be sometimes a need to point out mistakes or things in the course of improving the preaching or improving. We know, even Lakshmi Moni, when she gave her class, she was explaining how we're trying to improve things because in the past, devotees did so many different things in the course of spreading Krishna consciousness. with very great intention, but sometimes it counteracted the preaching.
Look at Srila Prabhupada's example. You know, sometimes devotees who are never in his presence have a kind of sentiment that he was just very gentle and nurturing and encouraging and inspiring, which he was, soft as a rose. But he was surely hard as a thunderbolt when a point needed to be expressed. And I've heard many devotees say that if it was possible for the soul to ever cease to exist, you would like to employ that ability when he got angry. But the thing is, as soon as his anger made his point, it was gone. It did not linger. But what does that testify? He had no personal agenda in the matter. He could, evoke anger and chastisement, whatever it took, to make a point, to establish a standard as a service. And then he'd just be completely sweet, gentle, and soft again. There was no lingering of that anger. What does that indicate? No envy, no enmity, only goodwill, which means it's humility, it's service to others, to encourage, even if forceful at times, to come to the proper standard. So if we have that freedom from envy and enmity, or even if we're not free, but as a service to Srila Prabhupada, we have to point out that the standard should be higher. But we convey in our dealings that it's meant to help you. It's not meant to put you down. That should be appreciated. And therefore, those in positions of authority or whatever who are commissioned with that thankless task of pointing out the faults in others for their own good, it's a very hazardous position to be in, and should be avoided at all costs unless it is awarded as a service to others. If you accept that with a service attitude to help others with whatever kindness you can muster, and first of all examining your own motives in terms of what agenda you might subtly fulfill in the exchange. If you can convey to others that you're establishing a standard or trying to improve a standard is meant for the person's welfare and benefit and advancement, that'll be appreciated and you'll be protected. But the false ego will use any excuse in the name of devotional service to vent its enmity by putting others down. We have to, first of all, scrutinizingly examine our own hearts to make sure that that is not being expressed whenever we instruct others or encourage others in improving the standard.
Okay. So you mentioned about the Gadadhar as a position, sometimes as a Lalita, sometimes as Radharani.
Sometimes as Rukmini.
Yeah. And then when Mahaprabhu was speaking with Ramananda Roy, and even later after, all along, he's also in that position, Lalita, instructing. So, is there something to understand about the different roles they have as in this position, as Lalita position? Or is that too subtle for us to grasp?
Well, all you really need to understand is that Mahaprabhu, you know, journeyed through a range of sentiments of all the avatars, of all the devotees, as well as those of Krishna. And whatever mood he was in, his intimate associates, like Swarup Damodar and Gadadhar Pandit, would assume a corresponding mood just to assist him in his experience. So what do you see in Gambhira? Whatever, and also at Rathayatra, whatever mood Mahaprabhu was feeling, and Swarup Damodar was so attuned, as the Brijabhasis are with Srimati, that he could read on his face, and he would sing a verse to enhance that mood. And if it went too much into separation, Swarup Damodar would sing the songs of union. If it went too much into the ecstasy of union, Swarup Damodar would sing songs of separation. To facilitate the Lord in pursuing the path that he desired to follow. So whatever, so Mahaprabhu, he's multidimensional personality, experiencing the full range of emotions of the various devotees, avatars, and Krishna himself, and Gadadhar Pandit, and Swarup Damodar would assume an identity and a personality with the mood and the words and the verses and songs just to facilitate his following in the footsteps of the Brijabhasis. Well, Ramananda Rai was pretty consistently in the mood of Vishakha when he wasn't in the mood of governor. Is really Swarup Damodar and Gadadhar Pandit who would alternate in the moods of Srimati Radharani, Lalita, Rukmini to enhance and moderate and direct Lord Chaitanya on the path of following in the footsteps of the Brijabhasis. Okay? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you. I'm going to call you. I'm still going to call you.